care that silence, Miss Kathy. They didn't want it to end. I didn't either. That's one of my most favorite Karen Drucker songs. Good morning.
Good morning.
So it's a little loud up. Oh, it's the Norman. Did you ask for that? Do you
no.
do that?
No.
Yeah. Get rid of the Norman. Do the monitors, please. When I get that feedback, I can't. I'm way too loud. Yeah. Okay, so we'll get there. I can still hear them, Norman. there's a button. We should put the name monitor on it because we have so many different people in the sound booth all the time. So good morning. I am Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the spiritual leader of this community. Apparently, I'm a little crabby this morning, wanting things my way, because as always, I have something to say. I have a big confession here, and that is when I sat down to write the talk this week, I went, What a silly title for a spiritual message. The title of my talk is The Etymology of Hospitality. And I thought it was so clever. I remember when I was inspired and I thought this is going to be a great talk, and I'm doing a series of talks this month that are all filling in that same theme of community, but ultimately allowing us to see the way in which relationship has this metaphysical meaning that is way bigger than just how good a friendship I have with Kathy. Although I will say, when you sing the song Beloved, I always get this vision of my beautiful friend Monica Gump. That was me and her song back in before I moved here and relocated. Okay, now I can't hear the monitor. Can you still hear me? Am I okay? Do you need, you're good? All right, then I'm going to move on. Thank you very much. Rod said maybe a little bit more volume for me now that we're better. So we're looking at this idea of ways in which people come together, what it means to demonstrate hospitality. Kay had a definition in her reading, and the Bradfords sang about it. Kathy's voice so beautifully expressed everything I want to address this morning. And the bottom line is, what does it mean to be hospitable? What does it mean to be in relationship? And that's true that the meaning, as Kay was reading from that Peter Block book, which is he's a business writer that has all this great spiritual influence. I love how those worlds are coming together now. But what does it mean when we look at this idea of entertaining both guests and strangers in terms of being hospitable? And I think that the bigger message that I have not really been obvious about all month, but the bigger message is, how do we get along with each other in this great big giant world where it's clear we have some differing opinions and we're being rather vociferous about some of our differing opinions in the last couple of years. And that is sure to get even louder as we move toward another political election in this country. So we're looking for, when we're looking at relationship or we're talking about community in all of these topics that we've been using all month, we're talking about the way things connect. So there is that way that we join in community. There is that way we sit in the sanctuary together on a Sunday morning. And there's a way we fit into that larger community, like, for instance, collecting the food bags that we then give out to people that come to the church and actually ask for if we have food. It's a way that we show up to help each other. And the definition for to be hospitable means to be friendly and welcoming to strangers or guests. But listen to some of these synonyms. Some of these words are really, they touch me. So it's welcoming. I mean, think a lot about that, because I'm going to be talking about that idea of being welcoming and friendly. But it's additionally neighborly. We talked about that last week. It's about being warm-hearted and kind and generous. But there's another word that shows up when you look at the synonyms for being hospitable. And that word is open-handed. And that's where I'm going to take us on an adventure this morning, to look at what is that when we are generous in the way that we are open-handed. So I have been talking about wholeness. When you look at community and you see that you are an individualized expression of the divine, then we come together in community and we're part of a whole, which is then part of a whole, which is then part of a greater whole, and ultimately, spiritual community serves to remind us that of our oneness, our connection to spirit itself. And so I found this quote that really stirred me. It's from Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, The Science of Mind. And here's what Holmes had to say about it. There is something about you and me that's cosmic, that's universal. It stretches over time and space. Just feel that image. Let us learn to think better about this. Now, let me read it one more time. There is something about you and me that is cosmic and universal, that stretches over time and space. Let us learn to think better about this. To think better. It's not saying we're not doing good enough. Be really careful here. To think better is to think in a slightly different way, where we are able to expand our concept of improving quality, of having a better quality. So it's not a measurement that's like, I didn't do good enough. It's like there, you can always return again every day as a fresh new slate and do things a little different than you did yesterday. And yesterday brought us information, did it not? Yesterday brings us information, so we have a little more to stand on when we face whatever it is that we face today. So when we see that the word hospitality comes from two different words. One is hospes, H-O-S-P-E-S, Latin origin. And it is from that definition, which is quite detailed, but it is where we get the word stranger. And if you think about being in a hospital, that you go to a hospital to be cared for, but basically you may know a nurse or you may know somebody that works behind the scenes, but primarily we are strangers to each other and we show up in order to care or to be cared for. So there's a strong relationship that implies not only guests and neighbors, but strangers as well. And when I expand that out into the world, it gives me a much broader understanding of it. But the last half of that word, hospitality, comes from the root potentia, which means, which brings us this hint of empowerment. The way that our coming together helps to empower another individual. Now we're looking at something beautiful. We're not disempowering. We're not talking about codependency where people don't get to do the stuff they do. We're talking about rising in such a way, caring about each other in such a way that we are helping to empower the other, whoever the other may be. And when we then add the spiritual idea of etymology, this is, I think, why I had to use the word etymology, even though it didn't excite me when I sat down to write the message. But etymology, what's that about? That's about looking at the origins of words. We're studying the origin of something, and guess what? This entire teaching is about learning to look at the origin of our lives. I don't mean like, where did you come from? I mean like, look what's in your life right now. What have we called forward? Or what have we pushed away that we don't have in our life? Or what have we allowed in our life? And therefore, if there was a way that began, there's another way we can choose again and create something different or better for a higher quality of experience in a very divine way. So we teach these practical, gorgeous tools that allow us to manifest things and ideas and new origins in original creations in our life by the way that we align ourselves to divine principle. We see that demonstrated in quirky little ways, you know, like my husband always gets the perfect parking space. He always gets the perfect parking space, and if I should worry if we're pulling in somewhere, he will just laugh at me. You know, look how this is going to work. Watch me. You know, you're the passenger in the car here. You just watch how I'm going to manage this. And so we pay attention to that stuff, and then voila, we begin to see that there's a way we are not victims in the world. There is a way we are participating in our own life. Let me tell you a cute little one that happened to me last week. Last Saturday, we had a gathering here, and it was a potluck, somebody made a really good Jell-O salad, and so I went up to Jan. Where are you, Jan? Jan Carroll. There you go. Way in the back there. So I go up to Jan Carroll, and I said, Jan, are you the one that made the Jell-O salad? And she said, yeah, I'm the Jell-O lady. And I said, hey, I have been craving a lime Jell-O with cottage cheese in it, maybe some nuts. Could you make me a Jell-O salad? The very next day, there was my cottage cheese. The very next day, all you have to do is ask. And so I looked everywhere for Jan. You know, often I don't get in there to eat till most everybody's, you know, I'm doing all this other stuff. But the kitchen makes me a plate. Hint, hint. Kitchen almost always makes me a little plate of something, so I have a little something to eat when I finally settle down. And so I'm looking all over the place to give Jan a great big thank you hug. And I went home. I never found her. So I went home and I called and I left a message on her machine. Now I haven't seen or heard from Jan all week. This morning I said, Jan, did you get my message? And she said, yes, but I didn't make the Jell-O. You see? And I said, and that's how the law works. Right? And so then Jan said, it was Barbara Kirshner that made the Jell-O. So then I found Barbara Kirshner and said, oh my God, thank you so much. That was so amazing. I asked by the very next day, green Jell-O with cottage cheese in it. And it was very much to my liking. Thank you. But you see, it is the little stuff that we appreciate. Holmes said that this is why we call it science, because you can prove it. And more than that, we should be attempting to prove it in our life all the time, looking for the ways we have been sort of receptive to the good we desire. Do you see that? Open-handed, ready to receive the good that we desire. So this teaching is all about looking at the origin of things so that we can begin then to understand the law of cause and effect, God as the cause with the capital C, cause, as the great creator of all things, and our role in that relationship. So we say that we are always actively creating in our lives, attracting, repelling, allowing, and we often say we are co-creators in our lives. And what we teach here is just that if you pay attention and if we are intentional, we will have a transformational experience in the kinds of things that we draw into our lives. It's much more than Jell-O, but isn't it nice to see the law in action? We create relationships as well. Let us be very clear here. You have some relationships with people that are not top-notch. There's a way that we are participating in that, even in the relationships that we didn't exactly choose. You know, like your mom or your siblings or your kids, even though with your kids we really try and change them and shape them into the personality we'd like them to have or what we think would be best for them, even though we probably don't know what's best for them, but nonetheless we dabble in all of that. And what I really wanted to say this morning at this point is that I really feel comfortable telling you that there is not a single relationship in your life that you haven't helped create. Amen. Okay, now that may sound a little harsh, but this could be good news, because if you don't like a relationship that you have, you still have that same power of creativity to reshape it. Right. Don't just allow things that are there. You don't have to push it away, and you don't have to attract relationships you don't want. You can find stable ground by way of spiritual principle, by way of spiritual practice, practicing spiritual principle, and you can change those things. Because, you know, there whether it's work, or play, you know, even when you go golf, you could be thrown an odd person to golf with you and now you're in relationship. You know, you could have be in the Sun City Quilting Club Circle, whatever it's called, and there could be people that join that maybe, you know, just aren't your favorite cup of tea kind of people. However, you are now in a relationship. So what are you going to do about it? Well, I say the first thing we do is we look at ownership. Own what's yours. You're not comfortable. Why are you not comfortable? Maybe it's not the bottom line that you stay in the group or leave the group. Maybe it's an opportunity for us to look at what's being triggered in our own experience of relationship. And maybe, I'm just saying, that's what life is all about. That is exactly why people come and go in our lives, so that we can learn to be accountable or have some self-responsibility, not in a bad way, like turning the other cheek. This is not about that. This is about choosing, and this is about acknowledging that all of us choose to relate to things in a very specific way. And that you can always change your mind. You can always learn to think better about this, as Holmes said. So, hospitality. Are you hospitable in those awkward relationships? And what does that mean? What would that look like? To be generous and open-handed and kind and warm-hearted, what would that look like when it's somebody you're not necessarily all that comfortable with? And whether they be strangers or guests, meaning you have invited them into your life or your home. So we look at that and we begin to understand that there's a way we can take this all out of the realm of the physical things that are happening and come to understand them in a deeper way. That's what metaphysical relationship was all about. I did that talk 2 weeks ago. Last week we talked about neighborology. There's good fodder for building healthy relationships in all of these talks, but notice they all go back to God. And that's what we're going to do with this idea of hospitality. So my question to you, hang on, because here comes the big reverse. Here comes the big turnaround. How hospitable are you to spirit? Sit with that one for just a minute. What would it look like to be open-handed to God? Oh, now we can see the spiritual wealth in this idea of understanding what it means to be hospitable. I think that when I turn it around and I look at my relationship with the divine, then the question is not how am I hospitable, but how am I open to the welcoming wisdom of spirit itself. Do I welcome that wisdom into my own life? Do I welcome love into my life? Do I stand with open hands ready to receive the good that not only at some level we all desire, but the good that is meant to be spread around on this planet through us, through our experience of living. So my big question is, do you take time to court the presence of God in your own life? Oh, really, really, I want you to take this home. Don't answer out loud, Miss Dorothy, to this next one. Do you take time to sit still and recognize the presence of God right where you are? Do you allow yourself, when you have been triggered, to go to Spirit open-handed and invite a different way of looking at the situation, a better way, because it's going to be a higher way once you open yourself to the divine guidance? Because this is the way in which we seek to connect to God. You know, I mean, ultimately, we always talk about the spiritual evolution of our personal faith, and we look at it's almost as if there's this goal that if we do all this right, we'll have bliss and we'll live in peace and love and joy forever after. I was just watching a gorgeous interview the other night of Oprah Super Soul Sunday. You know, Oprah with everybody knows Oprah. Oprah with Elizabeth Gilbert. It was Michael Beckwith, who is a minister, religious science minister. She was with Michael Beckwith, and Michael Beckwith was talking about the stages of faith, and then she said, what's the final kingdom? And he said, it's peace. You know, it's that place of oneness with God. And she says, oh, don't you just want to stay there? And Michael Beckwith so wisely in front of Oprah said, no, it's not like that. It's not a goal that you get there. It's something that we can experience at any time if we are welcoming the presence of God in our life. Open-handed, right? Put those hands together. Yes, we're talking about something very important here. So we anticipate that we could have an experience like that. And then the way we practice that is to intend to recognize the divine in another human being, right? I was at the grocery store yesterday. I don't know who goes to the store on Saturday when they don't have to, but I was at the grocery store and this gorgeous, wonderful, beautiful woman that worked there walked by and kind of bumped into me. And she said, she started laughing. I'm so sorry. I love you. And I said, I love you more, right? And so there with a total stranger, you have this welcoming exchange, this beautiful experience of love when it was least expected. It looked like a bump. And I would say to you that love often comes in a package that looks like a bump. And sometimes we think we've been bruised. And maybe the easiest way is just to say, I love you. I love you. Everything changes in the light of love. I think we also can see the sacred in something ordinary. The more we court the presence, the more we are likely to be stunned and in awe of something gorgeous and beautiful or simple and just in its own simplistic majesty. That's the great thing about life. You know, I just finished the Emma Curtis Hopkins reading group that we did for 6 weeks. So I always do Emma in six lessons because there's 12 lessons in all, but she only really teaches six lessons. The first six, you go through it for you, personal application. Then the last six lessons, 7 through 12, are the same lessons, but you learn how to be with other people, how to use the 12 lessons in your interactions with other people, the way we go out in the world. And so I love Emma because I get permission to dabble in mysticism. And see, that's all the love stuff. You know, we teach law here. That law, you know, do not be confused. That is the primary purpose of us gathering together, is so that you will be exposed to an understanding of the spiritual laws of the universe that are the same as the physical laws of the universe, that they work and they are in your life and you can use it, and that's how you can change your life. Mysticism is that part of courting the presence. You're not using that power, you're courting. And the way I look at it is, if you think of it as open-handed, it's where you get filled up, right? Oxygen mask on, you first, right? Plane's going down, you take in that everything that you need. And so that's where I get filled up. That's why I do my quiet work in the morning before I leave the house, so that I can then come and use the law all day long in order to have a better experience in my everyday living. So we did this lesson with Emma, and we noticed, I don't know why I've never made a big fuss over this in my observation, in my ability to notice, but Emma has a kajillion different terms for the names of God, or what she, how she refers to spirit itself. So, you know, obviously she uses God, she uses universe, she uses all the ones that we would be find common, but then she uses all these obscure ones. And I started thinking, because we talked about it a week ago, I started thinking about it like, there are a lot of different terms for God that she uses. And so I collected them. Before the last class, I went through the 6 chapters of High Mysticism sort of quickly, so I'm sure I missed a few. I collected all the terms I could find that she used for God, all the ways she calls God. And I came up, in a very short time, with 80 different terms for God. I typed them up, I distributed the list at class, and I actually put a few over on the prayer altar in the corner. If you would love to take one home, there's a stack of them over there for you. She uses terms like universal wisdom, right? We talk about God as universal wisdom, but she refers to God as the lofty one. The lofty one. The hidden high actual. Oh, got to think about that, don't you? The hidden, high, actual, all in capital letters. Instead of the word God, she calls it the hidden, high, actual. How about this one? You're going to love this one. The obedient, supreme presence. Why obedient? Because there's that aspect of the law that is absolutely obedient to our word. That's why whatever we speak shows up in our life. That's why if you don't like your life, pay attention to what you're speaking, to what you're calling forward. Take a class. We have really good skills for that. Especially that foundation class starting on September 17th. Reverend Karen, I hear, will be teaching that class because she never lets anybody else teach that class, because that's my favorite class to teach. Obedient supreme presence, right? That's because we learn that affirmative prayer is about putting our command on the law, and then the law responds. Listen to this one. The heavenly trend. Unspoilable wholeness. And this one really makes me think. I'm going to have to play with this one for a while. The high adequate. Oh. So there's a list of 80 different terms Emma used for God. It's over there. You can pick it up after the service. But I want you to see that there's something that happens when we let somebody with authority, and Emma, I give Emma a lot of authority because she helps me get clear on those things that are difficult to understand about the spiritual journey of life. She takes these adjectives and makes them sacred. She puts them with other descriptive words, and then she attaches them to things like the presence, wisdom, wholeness, or principle. And now, if you hang with that, if you read this stuff, if you play in it, you begin to see that God is not an entity. God is not the anthropomorphic, you know, guy on the cloud with a clipboard that, you know, that looks like Santa Claus, apparently, and sounds like Charlton Heston. And when we begin to expand or think a better thought about what God is, and that would then be extremely expansive, now we have a completely different relationship. We begin to be able to understand what it means to speak of in the God within. That there is no place that God is not, and therefore, right where I am, the fullness of spirit is completely here already. So now, with a broader understanding, we begin to see what all of the quantum physicists of the day, now that we have all these great scientists writing spiritual books, we begin to see that it's more like an energetic, that it is so, I mean, we can't imagine it, but that's the best part, is that if you can't put a face to it, you will learn to not disconnect or separate yourself. It's that sense of separation that always gets us in trouble. So, yeah. So we have so many great things to consider here. So, and keep in mind that Emma Curtis Hopkins, and maybe you don't know this, but she is considered the teacher of teachers because she personally taught every great New Thought leader that went on to start a church or a spiritual center or a teaching around these universal teachings. So, other interesting point is that in Unity, so Emma has the 12 lessons. In Unity, Charles Fillmore created he calls it the 12 powers, right? Emily Cady, a well-thought-of metaphysician, has the 12 lessons of truth. And so there's great symbology that just ripples out and becomes bigger and bigger. But let me bring it back to something we can personally relate to. Ernest Holmes, the word of Holmes again. We meet God every day and each hour in the day. We meet God in the rising sun and in the flowing stream and in the budding rose, in the joy of friendship and love and in the silence of our own soul. Now, I believe this is all foundational material here. These ideas are the root of what we, you know, of what we grow in or from. But Holmes had this beautiful ability to see how important it was to be able to recognize the presence of God. Right? I mean, you meet God every day and every hour. And then he gives this list of places and ways in which we encounter the holy. And we meet it as we recognize it. So let's put on an attitude of awareness and an attitude of expectation so that whenever we're in the world or we're sitting in the privacy of our own home, it doesn't matter, but that we are open and that we are open-handed, that we are ready to receive, that we are willing to receive the goodness that is generously given to us every hour of the day, every day and each and every hour of every day. So, what are the divine gifts in your life that you have received? Now, I want to be real specific here. And I want you to be aware of, and this is a great thing for you to be pondering this week, that all of us have received gifts, but did we think of it as a divine gift? So, in other words, have you ever been ill and prayed for health and noticed that the illness goes somewhere else and now you are well? But more important, do we realize it is in our willingness to receive, to be restored to our wholeness, that is the gift? You know, I say so often that if you're going to fill out a form for a prayer request, that the answer to the prayer begins to come to you even as you begin to think about what you're going to write on that form. You haven't even written it down yet. But the answer begins to move into your life because we begin to release, open our hands, be less attached to the illness, because now we're starting to think health instead of aches and pains or discomfort, and we gradually let that go so that something else can come. And it's a logical way that this happens. So when you notice you are in vibrant health, you know, wow, that is a time to give thanks, to appreciate it. Now, you know, don't wait till you're sick to appreciate vibrant health. There's something in this that we want to acknowledge and keep, keep the pump primed, you might say. Have you opened yourself to receive abundance in a situation of a financial challenge? Because, you know, it's so easy to go, oh, I'll never get out of this hole. Ay, 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 ay. And you know what? That isn't true. Every day, every hour of every day, there's God, right? There's no place that God's missing. God's not lacking because you don't have the balance in your checking account that you desire. But you don't get more. You don't get the better. You can't think better unless you let go of what you think is the balance that you're worried about. So what we have to do, the hard part is we start thinking right away, we start planning. Oh, I could do this to have more money, I could sell that, I could, and we're not starting in the right place when we do that. You begin open-handed, with a generous, warm heart, with confidence in the way that Spirit works in your life because you are committed to courting the presence of God. And when we do that, then we have a consciousness that will not block any of our good from us, but it will support, because our thinking now begins to support the better, the higher quality that we desire. So it always looks like it's something physical. It looks like it's stuff or something that can be measured. And in reality, it's a real divine quality that we have closed ourselves off from the experience of. Now, you put it back in perspective. Remember, we flipped this upside down. We're courting God now. We're not trying to do better. We're recognizing what already exists in our life. Can you receive love after you've been hurt? You know, I mean, wow. Most of us have been hurt in some way, emotionally, or we've had our feelings hurt, or we've been disappointed by other people in our life. Can we get beyond that? So that we are not the problem that is blocking more love from coming into our life. It's about being able to stand open-handed, and I don't understand what just happened, and it hurt, but I am willing to know that there is no obstacle to the flow of love in my life. So it's up to us to obliterate that temptation to put a wall up and protect ourselves. We have to get rid of that, let it go, and stand before Spirit itself and be open to receive it. So when we are open-handed, when we are ready to receive, what happens is, we begin to recognize, as things start to move, we begin to embody principle. We begin to embody, because we're not closed off and hanging on because we're scared. We're open-handed, and then we can embody the natural flow of that good into our life. So God is always giving it, but the only way you can get it is by receiving it. I have to embody love before I can be more loving. Think about that. You can't be more loving if you don't embody that amazing, rich gift of pure love that we say God is. Can't embody it if you've got anything else going on. And you can't just run to the store. When you feel low on it, you can't run to the grocery store and buy more of it like you would coffee or trash bags and stuff. Right? You got to do an action. You have to practice it. It is a trust of practicing that openness. And ultimately, what it means is you become it because you have welcomed it. You have allowed it into your life. That's what we mean when we say that God in me, as me, God through me, God expressing through me, as me, is me. You know, when I open to God's love, then that love is me. But you have to be open, and you have to receive it, and you have to accept it, and you have to call it, and you have to court it. You have to want it. And you have to know that nothing can stop you from having it except your own thoughts. So being open to spirit is allowing that, let's look at it as light. God's light just floods into your life. Love just pours over and spills into your life and moves through you and expresses as you. And I love that line in the Course in Miracles. I say it every time I stand here and pray. I feel the love of God within me. Can you feel that? I studied the Course in Miracles in great depth long before I came to religious science. I always said, I'm not sure I would have been open to this teaching had I not learned to understand metaphysical spirituality, and I did that through this book. Then I was ready for the science of mind, for religious science. And at that time, I realized there was no distinction, there was no difference, that everything in here is everything that we teach. It's just written in a slightly different tone. I'm so happy Joan is, I think I saw Joan. Is Joan here? Joan is here. I'm so happy Joan is bringing the Course in Miracles. She has brought the Course in Miracles back. I love that we have an ongoing group here all the time in this book. But Joan is doing the workbook lessons. And so when I thought of that line, I feel the love of God within me now, I remembered it is lesson 189 in my book. It's easy to find because I know it. And I also remembered that there's this incredible paragraph in this book that speaks to what it is to court the presence. So we talk about love, we talk about law, we talk about how to use this spiritual law that is freely given, how to empower our lives by making choice, and we talk about love where we sit open-handed and we receive, we fill up, we allow spirit to speak to us and guide us. And then I remembered this paragraph in lesson 189, and I want to read it to you as we conclude the message this morning. There comes a time where we should simply do this. Be still. Lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is, all concepts you have learned about the world, all images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is true or false and good or bad, and hold on to nothing. Right? We don't have it all figured out. That's where we get into trouble. Do nothing. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought that the past has taught you. Do not bring one belief you ever learned before from anything. Forget this world. Forget this course. Forget this teaching and come with wholly empty hands unto your God. You need not know the way. Your part is simply to allow all the obstacles that you have put there to be quietly removed forever. This is my whole message this morning. This is everything I wanted to say summed up in a paragraph. But then there's a little prayer at the very bottom of this section. And there's a line in the middle of the prayer, and it just gives me chills that I just found this line this morning. Right in the middle of the prayer, Father, our hands are open to receive your gifts. So we let go, we let God, we allow, we receive, we welcome spirit, we welcome peace, and we welcome love, and we welcome joy, and we know that we can always pause and choose again to think better at a higher quality of what's possible. Oh, and I think that's what I wanted to say this morning. And I'd like to anchor all of this in the words of prayer. So I'd like to just call forward the practitioners, the ministers. If you would just surround the room at this time, we will anchor all of this. So just breathe. Let go. Open your hands and stretch your fingers. And know that there is a way to court the presence of God. Right now, in this very moment, I feel the love of God within me. It is that movement, that activity of life itself, that quickening within that reminds us of the ongoingness of life. Right where we are, God is. And so in this beautiful Sunday morning, we stand in that presence, in that magnificent way of expressing openness, of recognizing the desires of our heart that we wish to call forward at this time, that inevitability of the expression of love and peace and joy, the way that we can see and witness harmony and perfect order in this universe. We just breathe and we move and we find a new sense of rhythm because it is a divine rhythm. It is a holy alignment. It is a way in which we have this great capacity to fill ourselves up. It is indeed the air we breathe, for that divine inspiration is the kiss of life. It is the way that spirit itself has kissed us into breath, into living. It is that very movement that aligns the planets to orbit in the perfect way, that guides the tides and the ebb and the flow and the movement of all of life. The cycles, the circular action that brings us to remember the natural movement of the days and the seasons. I feel the love of God, and I know it is that same presence of God that is stirring right now at the core of each person sitting in this sanctuary. I know it is that aliveness that insists on tomorrow, that insists on us to be tempted to understand eternity, to look again at the idea of infinity, to know that in spite of how much good we have in our life, there is always more tomorrow. And so we empty ourselves out to be vessels so we can fill ourselves up. We open our hands to be open-handed and welcoming to the presence of the Holy Spirit. And I know that as we allow that energy to move through our being, that we are indeed quickened, we are healed, we are expansive, that there is more love that is needed to be expressed on this planet right now, and that we allow ourselves to be those vessels through which that love flows. And in that movement of love and that recognition of the sacredness of life, we can become a part of the goodness, that goodness that longs to be a part of this changing culture of life on this planet. And so I know that simply by being here and opening ourselves to God's highest good, that it allows us to know there is good work to be done on the world, and that when we are willing to experience joy and happiness in our life, we shift the very vibration of the space that is ours, and it ripples out doing magnificent work. And so I say, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit, for a fresh awareness of the infinite blessings. And in this spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always responds affirmatively, and together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen. Yeah.